When he spoke again, his voice brimmed with unexpected tenderness. I'm not saying this to make you angry. I'm saying this because I think you're the most remarkable woman I've ever met. Again he paused before going on, making sure his words had penetrated. The thing is, I'm pretty sure that almost every man would feel the same way I do. And since you have gone out with other men, especially in this small town where there are only so many available women in your age group, I'm sure they would have recognized the terrific person that you are. Okay, maybe some of them weren't your cup of tea, so you ended it. But what about the others? The ones you liked? There had to have been someone, somewhere along the line, with whom you seemed to click. He scooped up a handful of sand and slowly spread his fingers, allowing the grains to slip through his fingers. That's what I've been thinking about, because it's just not plausible that you wouldn't have clicked with someone, and yet you told me yourself that you haven't had a lot of luck in the dating world. He wiped his hand on the towel. Am I wrong so far? She stared at him, wondering how he knew so much. No, she said. And you've wondered about it, haven't you? Sometimes, she confessed. But don't you think you're reading way too much into this? Even if I were as perfect as you say, you have to remember that times have changed. There are probably thousands, if not tens of thousands of women that you could describe in the same way. Perhaps. He shrugged. But now you're not convinced. No. His clear blue eyes held her in their unwavering scrutiny. What? You think there's some sort of conspiracy? Instead of answering directly, he reached for another handful of sand. What can you tell me about your ex? He asked. Why does that matter? I'm curious as to how he feels about you dating. I'm sure he doesn't care in the slightest, and I can't imagine why you think that even matters. He released the sand all at once. Because, he said, his voice low, he turned toward her. I'm pretty sure he was the one who broke into my house the other day. Chapter 19. Tebow. Late Saturday evening, after Elizabeth had left, Tebow found Victor sitting in his living room, still dressed in the shorts and cabana-style shirt he'd been wearing on the day he died. The sight of him stopped Tebow in his tracks. All he could do was stare. It wasn't possible, nor was it really happening. Tebow knew that Victor was gone, buried in a small plot near Bakersfield. He knew Zeus would have reacted had anyone real been in the house, but Zeus simply wandered to his water bowl. In the silence, Victor smiled. There is more, he said, his voice a hoarse promise. When Tebow blinked, Victor was gone, and it was obvious he'd never been there at all. It was the third time Tebow had seen Victor since he had passed away. The first time had been at the funeral, when Tebow had rounded a corner near the back of the church and seen Victor staring at him from the end of the hallway. It's not your fault, Victor had said before dissolving away. Tebow's throat had closed up, forcing him to rush to catch his breath. The second appearance occurred 3 weeks before he set out on his walk. That time it had happened in the grocery store, as Tebow was rummaging through his wallet, trying to figure out how much beer he could purchase. He'd been drinking heavily in those days, and as he counted the bills, he saw an image from the corner of his eye. Victor shook his head, but said nothing. He didn't have to. Tebow knew that he was being told that it was time to end the drinking. Now this. Tebow didn't believe in ghosts, and he knew that the image of Victor hadn't been real. There was no specter haunting him, no visits from beyond, no restless spirit with a message to deliver. Victor was a figment of his imagination, and Thibault knew that his subconscious had conjured up the image. After all, Victor had been the one person Thibault had always listened to. He knew the boating accident had been just that, an accident. The kids who'd been driving the boat had been traumatized, and their horror at what had happened was genuine. As for the drinking, he'd known deep down that the booze was doing more harm than good. Somehow, though, it was easier to listen to Victor. The last thing he'd expected was to see his friend once more. He considered Victor's words, "There is more," and wondered whether they related to his conversation with Elizabeth. Somehow he didn't think so, but he couldn't figure it out, and it nagged at him. He suspected that the harder he pressed himself for an answer, the less likely it was that the answer would come. The subconscious was funny like that. He wandered to the small kitchen to pour himself a glass of milk, put some food in the bowl for Zeus, and went to his room. Lying in bed, he brooded on the things he told Elizabeth. He'd thought long and hard about saying anything at all. He wasn't even certain what he'd hoped to accomplish by doing so, other than to open her eyes to the possibility that Keith Clayton might just be controlling her life in ways she couldn't imagine, which was exactly what the man was doing. Thibault had become sure of it when he'd first noticed the break-in. Of course, it could have been anyone, someone wanting to make a quick buck grabbing items that could be sold in pawn shops. But the way it had been done suggested otherwise. It was too neat. Nothing had been strewn about. Nothing was even out of place. Nearly everything had, however, been adjusted. The blanket on the bed was the first giveaway. There was a tiny ridge in the blanket, caused by someone who didn't know how to tuck in the covers military fashion, something few, if anyone, would have noticed. He noticed. The clothes in his drawers showed similar disturbances, a rumple here, a sleeve folded the wrong way there. Not only had someone entered the home while he'd been at work, but he'd searched the house thoroughly. But why? Thibault had nothing of value to steal. A quick peek through the windows beforehand made it plain there was nothing valuable in the place. Not only was the living room devoid of electronics, but the second bedroom stood completely empty, and the room where he slept contained only a bed, end table, and lamp. Aside from dishes and utensils and an ancient electric can opener on the counter, the kitchen was empty too. The pantry contained dog food, a loaf of bread, and a jar of peanut butter. But someone had taken the time to search the house anyway from top to bottom, including under his mattress. Someone had diligently gone through his drawers and cleaned up afterward. No outrage at finding nothing of value, no evident frustration that the break-in had been a waste. Instead, the burglar had attempted to cover his tracks. Whoever had broken in had come to the house not to steal, but to look for something. Something specific. It hadn't taken long to figure out what it was and who had been responsible. Keith Clayton wanted his camera. Or more likely, he wanted the disc. Probably because the photographs on the disc could get him in trouble. No great leap of logic, considering what Clayton had been doing the first time they'd bumped into each other. All right, so Clayton wanted to cover his tracks. But there was still more to this than met the eye. And it had to do with Elizabeth. It didn't make sense that she hadn't had any relationships in the past 10 years. But it did jibe with something he'd heard while standing around the pool table, showing her picture to the group of locals. What had one of them said? It had taken a while to recall the exact words, and he wished he had paid more attention to the comment. He'd been so focused on learning Elizabeth's name, he'd ignored it at the time. A mistake. In hindsight, there was something menacing about the comment's implication. Let's just say she doesn't date. Her ex wouldn't like it, and trust me, you don't want to mess with him. He reviewed what he knew about Keith Clayton. Part of a powerful family, a bully, quick to anger, in a position to abuse his power. Someone who thought he deserved whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted it. Thibault couldn't be certain about the last one, but it all fit the picture. Clayton didn't want Elizabeth to see other men. Elizabeth hadn't had any meaningful relationships in years. Elizabeth occasionally wondered why, but hadn't even considered the possible connection between her ex-husband and failed relationships. To Thibault, it seemed entirely plausible that Clayton was manipulating people and events and, at least in one way, still controlling her life. For Clayton to know that Elizabeth was dating someone in the past meant that Clayton had been watching over her for years, just as he was watching over her now. It wasn't hard to imagine how Clayton had ended her previous relationships, but so far, he'd kept his distance when it came to Thibault and Elizabeth. So far, Thibault hadn't seen him spying from a distance, hadn't noticed anything out of the ordinary. Instead, Clayton had broken into his house in search of the disc when he knew Thibault would be at work. Getting his ducks in a row? Probably. But the question was, to what end? To run Thibault out of town, at the very least. Still, Thibault couldn't shake the feeling that this wouldn't be the end. As Victor had said, there is more. He'd wanted to share with Elizabeth what he knew about her ex, but he couldn't come right out and tell her about the comment he'd overheard at the pool hall. That would mean telling her about the photograph, and he couldn't do that yet. Instead, he wanted to point her in the right direction, hoping she would begin to make the connections herself. Together, once they both knew the extent to which Clayton was willing to sabotage her relationships, they would be able to handle whatever he chose to do. They loved each other. They would know what to expect. It would all work out. Was this the reason he'd come? To fall in love with Elizabeth and make a life together? Was this his destiny? For some reason, it didn't feel right. Victor's words seemed to confirm that. There was another reason that he'd come here. Falling in love with Elizabeth may have been part of it, but that wasn't all. Something else was coming. There is more. Thibault slept the rest of the night without waking, just as he had since arriving in North Carolina. A military thing, or more accurately, a combat thing, something he'd learned out of necessity. Tired soldiers made mistakes. His father had said that. Every officer he'd ever known had said that. His wartime experience confirmed the truth of their statements. He'd learned to sleep when it was time to sleep, no matter how chaotic things were, trusting he'd be better for it the following day. Aside from the brief period after Victor's death, sleep had never been a problem. He liked sleep, and he liked the way his thoughts seemed to coalesce while he was dreaming. On Sunday, when he woke, he found himself visualizing a wheel with spokes extending from the center. He wasn't sure why, but a few minutes later, when he was walking Zeus outside, he was suddenly struck by the notion that Elizabeth wasn't the center of the wheel, as he'd unconsciously assumed. Instead, he realized, everything that had happened since he'd arrived in Hampton seemed to revolve around Keith Clayton. Clayton, after all, had been the first person he'd met in town. He'd taken Clayton's camera. Clayton and Elizabeth had been married. Clayton was Ben's father. Clayton had sabotaged Elizabeth's relationships. Clayton had seen them spending an evening together on the night he'd brought Ben home with the black eye. In other words, he'd been the first to know about them. Clayton had broken into his house. Clayton, not Elizabeth, was the reason he'd come to Hampton. In the distance, thunder sounded, low and ominous. There was a storm on the way, and the heaviness in the air portended a big one. Aside from what Elizabeth had told him about Clayton, he realized he knew very little about Elizabeth's former husband. As the first drops began to fall, Thibault went back outside. Later, he would visit the library. He had a little research ahead of him, if he hoped to get a better feel for Hampton and the role the Claytons played in it. Chapter 20. Beth.
"Doesn't surprise me," Nana snorted. "I wouldn't put anything past your late husband."
"He's not dead, Nana."
Nana sighed.
"Hope springs eternal."
Beth took a sip of her coffee. It was Sunday, and they had just returned from church. For the first time since Nana's stroke, Nana had had a small solo in one of the musical numbers, and Beth hadn't wanted her to be distracted. She knew how much the choir meant to her.
"You're not helping me," Beth said.
"What's to help?"
"I was just saying..."
Nana leaned across the table.
"I know what you're saying. You've already told me, remember? And if you're asking whether I think Keith actually broke into Tebow's house, I'm simply saying that it wouldn't surprise me. I've never liked that man."
"Gee, really?"
"There's no reason to get fresh about it."
"I'm not getting fresh."
Nana didn't seem to hear her.
"You look tired. Do you want more coffee? Or how about some cinnamon toast?"
Beth shook her head.
"I'm not hungry."
"Even so, you still have to eat. It's not healthy to skip meals, and I know you've already skipped breakfast."
She got up from the table.
"I'm making toast."
Beth knew there was no point in arguing. Once Nana made up her mind about something, there was no way to dissuade her.
"What about the other part? About whether Keith had something to do with..."
She trailed off. Nana shrugged as she put two pieces of bread in the toaster.
"About running other men off? Nothing that man did would surprise me. And it kind of explains things, doesn't it?"
"But it doesn't make sense. I can name at least half a dozen women he's gone out with, and it's not like he's even hinted that he wants to get back together. Why would he care whether or not I date?"
"Because he's no better than a spoiled child,"
Nana declared. She put a couple of dabs of butter into a saucepan and turned on the burner. A small blue flame whooshed to life.
"You were his toy, and even though he's got new toys, it doesn't mean he wants anyone to play with his old toys."
Beth shifted in her seat.
"I'm not sure I like that analogy."
"It doesn't matter if you like it. All that matters is whether it's true."
"And you think it is?"
"That's not what I said. What I said was that it wouldn't surprise me. And don't tell me you're surprised either. I've seen the way he still looks you up and down. It gives me the willies. And it's all I can do to keep from clobbering him with the pooper scooper."
Beth smiled, but it lasted only an instant. When the toast popped up, Nana grabbed the pieces and put them on a plate. She dribbled melted butter over the top, then added sugar and cinnamon. She brought over the plate and set it in front of Beth.
"Here, eat something. You're skeletal these days."
"I weigh the same as I always have."
"Which isn't enough. It's never been enough. If you're not careful, you'll blow away in the storm."
She nodded toward the window as she took her seat again.
"It's going to be a big one, which is good. We need the rain. I hope we don't have any howlers in the kennel."
Howlers were dogs that were afraid of storms, and they made life miserable for the other dogs. Beth recognized the conversation shift as an opportunity to change the subject. Nana usually offered a way out, but as Beth took a bite of her toast, she realized there was something else she wanted to discuss.
"I think they've met before," she finally said.
"Who? Tebow and the loser?"
Beth raised her hands.
"Please don't call him that. I know you don't like him, but he's still Ben's father, and I don't want you to get into the habit of calling him that when Ben can hear you. I know he's not here right now."
Nana gave a rueful smile.
"You're right," she said. "I'm sorry. I won't say it again. But what were you telling me?"
"Do you remember when I told you about the night Keith brought Ben back home with the black eye? You were at your sister's."
She saw Nana nod.
"Last night, I got to thinking about it. I didn't pick up on it then, but when Keith saw Logan, he didn't ask who Logan was. Instead, it was like a switch went on and he got angry right away. He said something like, 'What are you doing here?'"
"So?"
Nana's expression was blank.
"It was the way he said it. He wasn't so much surprised that some man was at the house as much as he was surprised that Logan in particular was at the house. Like Logan was the last person he'd expected to see."
"What does Tebow say?"
"He hasn't said anything. But it makes sense, doesn't it? That they've crossed paths before? Since he thinks Keith broke into his house?"
"Maybe," Nana said, then shook her head. "I don't know. Did Tebow say what he thought your ex might be looking for?"
"No," she said. "He didn't. Other than to say that there wasn't much to find."
"Which is a way of answering the question without really answering it.
Beth agreed. She took another bite of toast, thinking there was no way she could finish all of it. Nana leaned forward. And that worries you, too.
A little,
Beth said, giving a small nod. Because you feel like he's keeping something from you. When Beth didn't answer, Nana reached across the table and took her hand.
I think you're worrying about the wrong things here. Maybe your ex broke into Tebow's house and maybe he didn't. Maybe they have come across each other before, or maybe not. But neither of those things is as important as whether or not your ex has been working behind the scenes against you.
If I were you, that's what I'd be concerned about, because that's the part that mainly affects you. She paused, letting her words sink in.
I say that because I've seen you and Tebow together, and it's obvious how much he cares for you. And I think the reason he told you his suspicions was because he doesn't want the same thing to happen to him that's happened to the other men you've dated.
So you think Logan is right?
Yes, Nana said. Don't you?
It took a long time for Beth to respond.
I think so, too.
It was one thing to think it. It was another thing to be sure. After their conversation, Beth changed into her jeans, threw on her raincoat, and drove into town. The rain had started in earnest a couple of hours earlier, a gusty downpour powered by a tropical storm that had come up through Georgia by way of South Carolina. The news was predicting 6 to 8 inches of rain in the next 24 hours, with more to come. Two more storms in the Gulf of Mexico had come ashore in recent days and were expected to eventually roll through the area as well, bringing even more rain. The hot, dry summer was officially coming to an end. Beth could barely see through the windshield even with the wipers at full speed. The gutters were beginning to flood, and as she drove toward the town, she saw jagged eddies of water making their way to the river. So far, the river hadn't risen yet, but it would. Nearly every tributary within 50 miles fed it, and she suspected the river would reach the flood stage before long. The town could handle flooding. Storms like these were a part of life in this region of the country, and most of the businesses were far enough away from the river to avoid most of the effects of all but the most exceptional of storms. The road that led to the kennel, because it ran parallel to the river, was another story. In heavy storms, especially during hurricanes, the river would sometimes stretch across it, making passage dangerous. It wouldn't be a problem today, but later in the week, she suspected things might get a lot worse. In the car, she continued to mull over her conversation with Nana. Yesterday morning, things had seemed so much simpler, but now she couldn't shake the questions going through her mind, not only about Keith, but about Logan. If it was true that Logan and Keith had met before, why hadn't Logan said anything? And what had Keith been looking for in Logan's house? As a sheriff, Keith had access to all sorts of personal information, so it couldn't be something along those lines. What was it, then? For the life of her, she couldn't figure it out. And Keith? What if Nana and Logan were right? And assuming they were right, because after giving the matter some thought, she felt instinctively that it was all true, how could she not have seen it? It was hard to admit that she could have misjudged him. She'd been dealing with the man for over 10 years now, and though she'd never regarded him as a beacon of goodness, the idea of him sabotaging her personal life was something she'd never considered. Who would do something like that? And why? The way Nana described it, that he thought of her as a toy he didn't want to share, had a ring of truth that made her neck tense as she drove. What surprised her most was that in this small town, where secrets were nearly impossible to keep, she'd never even suspected it. It made her wonder about her friends and neighbors, but mostly it made her wonder about the men who'd asked her out in the first place. Why wouldn't they simply have told Keith to mind his own business? Because, she reminded herself, he was a Clayton. And those men didn't argue for the same reason she didn't press Keith when it came to Ben. Sometimes it was easier just to get along. She really hated that family. Of course, she was getting ahead of herself here. Just because Logan and Nana suspected that Keith was up to something didn't necessarily make it true, she reminded herself, which was why she was making this trip. She took a left at the major intersection, heading toward an older neighborhood, one dominated by craftsman-style homes and large, spacious porches. The streets were lined with massive trees, most at least 100 years old, and she remembered that as a kid it had always been her favorite neighborhood. It was a tradition among the families there to lavishly decorate the exterior of the homes on holidays, giving the place a picturesque, cheery feel. His house was in the middle of the street, and she could just make out his car parked beneath the carport. Another car was parked behind it, and though it meant he had company, she didn't feel like coming back later. After pulling to a stop in front of the house, she put up the hood on her raincoat and stepped out into the storm. She splashed through shallow puddles that had accumulated on the walkway and climbed the steps to the porch. Through the window, she could see a lamp blazing in the corner of the living room. A television nearby was broadcasting the latest race from NASCAR. The visitor must have insisted on it. There wasn't a chance that the owner of the house had tuned it in. The man hated NASCAR, she knew. She rang the doorbell and took a small step back. When his face appeared in the doorway, it took only an instant for him to recognize her. In his expression, she saw a mixture of surprise and curiosity, along with a trace of something else she hadn't expected, fear. His gaze traveled quickly up the road in both directions before coming to rest on her. "Beth," he said, "what are you doing here?"
"Hi, Adam," she smiled. "I was wondering if you had just a couple of minutes. I'd really like to talk to you."
"I've got company," he said in a low voice. "It's not a good time."
As if on cue, she heard a woman's voice call out from somewhere behind him.
"Who is it?"
"Please," Beth said.
He seemed to be calculating whether or not to close the door in her face before he sighed. "A friend," he called out. He turned.
"Give me a minute, okay?"
A woman appeared over his shoulder, holding a beer and wearing jeans and a t-shirt that were a little too snug. Beth recognized her as a secretary in Adam's office, Noelle or something like that.
"What does she want?"
Noelle asked. It was obvious by her tone that the recognition was reciprocal.
"I don't know," Adam said. "She just dropped by, okay?"
"But I want to see the race,"
she pouted, draping an arm possessively around his waist.
"I know," he said. "I won't be long."
He hesitated when he saw Noelle's expression.
"I promise," he reassured her.
Beth wondered whether the whine she'd noticed in his tone had always been there, and if so, why she hadn't noticed it before. Either he'd tried to hide it, or she'd been willing to ignore it. She suspected the latter, and the thought left her feeling a bit deflated. Adam stepped outside and closed the door behind him. As he faced her, she couldn't tell whether he was frightened or angry, or both.
"What is so important?"
he asked. He sounded like an adolescent.
"Nothing important," she countered. "I just came by to ask you a question."
"About what?"
Beth willed him to look at her.
"I want to know the reason you never called after our date."
"What?"
He shifted from one foot to the other, reminding her of a skittish horse.
"You've got to be kidding."
"I'm not."
"I just didn't, okay? It didn't work out. I'm sorry. Is that what you're here for? An apology?"
It came out like a whine, and she found herself wondering why she'd ever gone out with him.
"No, I'm not here for an apology."
"Then what?" "Look, I've got company."
He jerked a thumb over his shoulder.
"I've got to go."
As the question hung in the air, he glanced up and down the street again, and she realized what was going on.
"You're afraid of him, aren't you?"
she said. Though he tried to hide it, she knew she'd hit a nerve.
"Who? What are you talking about?"
"Keith Clayton, my ex."
He opened his mouth to say something, but nothing came out. Instead, he swallowed again in an attempt to deny it.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
She took a step closer.
"What did he do? Did he threaten you? Scare you?"
"No, I don't want to talk about this," he said.
He turned for the door and reached for the knob. She grabbed his arm to stop him, pushing her face close to his. His muscles tensed before relaxing.
He did, didn't he?
She pressed. I can't talk about this. He hesitated. Though she'd suspected that both Logan and Nana were right, though her intuition had prompted her to come here in the first place, she felt something crumple inside when Adam confirmed it.
What did he do?
I can't tell you. You should understand that more than anyone. You know how he is. He trailed off, as if suddenly realizing that he'd said too much.
He'll what?
He shook his head. Nothing. He's not going to do anything. He stood straighter. It didn't work out between us. Just leave it at that. He opened the door. He paused, drawing a deep breath, and she wondered if he was about to change his mind. Please don't come back, he said. Beth sat on her front porch in the swing, staring at the sheets of rain coming down, her clothes still wet. For the most part, Nana left her alone with her thoughts, intruding only to hand her a cup of hot tea and a warm homemade peanut butter cookie. But she'd been uncharacteristically silent when she'd done so. Beth sipped the tea before realizing that she didn't want it. She wasn't cold. Despite the relentless downpour, the air was warm and she could see fingers of mist crawling along the property. In the distance, the driveway seemed to vanish into the grayish blur. Her ex would be here soon. Keith Clayton. Every now and then she'd whisper the name, making it sound like a profanity. She couldn't believe it. No, scratch that. She could and did believe it. Even though she'd wanted to slap Adam for being such a wimp about the situation, she knew she couldn't really blame him. He was a nice guy, but he wasn't, nor had he ever been, the kind of guy who would have been picked first for a pickup basketball or baseball game. There wasn't a chance that he would have stood up to her ex. She only wished Adam had revealed how Keith had done it. It was easy to imagine. She had no doubt Adam rented his office from the Clayton family. Almost every business downtown did. Did he play the rent card? Or the we can make life difficult for you card? Or did he play the law enforcement card? How far had the man been willing to go? Since she'd been sitting outside, she'd tried to figure out exactly how many times it had happened. There weren't that many, maybe 5 or 6, she thought, that it ended in much the same sudden, inexplicable way it had ended with Adam. That was counting Frank, which was, what, 7 years ago? Had he been following her, spying on her that long? The realization made her sick to her stomach. And Adam. What was it about the men she picked that made each of them roll over and play dead the moment Keith intervened? Yes, they were a powerful family, and yes, he was a sheriff, but whatever happened to being a man, telling him to mind his own business? And why didn't they at least come to her and tell her? Instead, they'd slunk off with their tails between their legs. Between them and Keith, she hadn't had the best of luck with men. How did that saying go? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Was it her fault for picking such disappointing men? Maybe, she admitted. Still, that wasn't the issue. The issue was that Keith had been working behind the scenes to keep things exactly the way he wanted, as if he owned her. The thought made her stomach roil again, and she wished that Logan were here. Not because Keith would be here soon to drop off Ben. She didn't need him for that. She wasn't afraid of Keith. She'd never been afraid of him because she knew that deep down he was a bully. And bullies were quick to back down when anyone stood up to them. It was the same reason Nana wasn't afraid of Keith. Drake, too, had sensed that, and she knew he'd always made Keith nervous. No, she wanted Logan here because he was good at listening, and she knew he wouldn't interrupt her rant or try to solve her problem, or get bored if she said, I can't believe he actually did that, 100 times. He would let her vent. Then again, she thought, the last thing she wanted was to talk the anger out of her system. It was much better to let it simmer. She needed the anger when she confronted Keith. It would keep her sharp. But at the same time, she didn't want to lose control. If she started screaming, Keith would simply deny it all before storming off. What she wanted, however, was for Keith to stay out of her private life, especially now that Logan was in the picture, without making Ben's weekends with his father any worse than they already were. No, it was better that Logan wasn't here. Keith might overreact if he saw Logan again, even provoke Logan to action somehow, which could be a problem. If Logan so much as touched her ex, he'd find himself in jail for a long, long time. She had to talk to Logan about that later to make sure he understood how the deck was stacked in Hampton. But for now, she had to handle her little problem. In the distance, headlights appeared and the car seemed first to liquefy, then solidify as it approached the house. She saw Nana peek through the curtains, then pull back. Beth rose from the swing and stepped toward the edge of the porch as the passenger door swung open. Ben scrambled out holding his backpack and stepped into a puddle, soaking his shoes. He didn't seem to notice as he trotted toward the steps and up to the porch. "Hey, Mom," he said. They hugged before he looked up at her. "Can we have spaghetti for dinner?" "Sure, sweetie. How was your weekend?" He shrugged. "You know." "Yeah," she said. "I know. Why don't you go inside and change? I think Nana baked some cookies. And take off your shoes, okay?" "Are you coming?" "In a few minutes. I want to talk to your dad first." "Why?" "Don't worry. It's not about you." He tried to read her expression, and she put her hand on his shoulder. "Go on. Nana's waiting." Ben went inside as Keith rolled down his window a couple of inches. "We had a great time this weekend. Don't let him tell you any different." His tone was full of an airy confidence. Probably, she thought, because Logan wasn't around. She took another step forward. "Do you have a minute?" He stared at her through the crack before he slipped the car into park and shut off the engine. He pushed open the door, stepped out, and ran toward the steps. Once on the porch, he shook his head, sending a few drops of water flying before grinning at her. He probably thought he looked sexy. "What's up?" he asked. "Like I said, Ben and I had a great time this weekend." "Did you make him clean your kitchen again?" The grin faded. "What do you want, Beth?" "Don't get sore. I just asked a question." He continued to stare at her, trying to read her. "I don't tell you what to do with Ben when he's with you, and I expect the same courtesy. Now, what do you want to talk about?" "A few things, actually." Despite the disgust she felt, she forced a smile and motioned to the porch swing. "Would you like to sit down?" He seemed surprised. "Sure," he said. "But I can't stay long. I've got plans this evening." "Of course you do," she thought. "Either that or you want me to think that you do." The kind of reminder that had been typical since their divorce. They took a seat on the swing. After sitting, he jiggled it back and forth before leaning back and spreading his arms. "This is nice. Did you do this?" She tried to keep as much distance between them on the swing as she could.
"Logan put it up."
"Logan?"
"Logan Tebow. He works for Nana at the kennel now. Remember? You met him."
He scratched his chin. "The guy that was here the other night?" "As if you don't know."
"Yes, that's him."
"And he's okay with cleaning cages and scooping up crap?" he asked. She ignored the obvious dig.
"Uh-huh."
He exhaled as he shook his head. "Better him than me." He turned toward her with a shrug. "So, what's up?" She considered her words carefully.
"This is hard for me to say."
She trailed off, knowing it would make him more interested. "What is it?" She sat up straighter.
"I was talking to one of my friends the other day, and she said something that just didn't sit right with me."
"What did she say?" Keith leaned toward her, alert.
"Well, before I tell you, I just want to say that it was one of those rumor mill things. A friend of a friend of a friend heard something, and it eventually got passed on to me. It's about you."
His expression was curious. "You have my attention."
"What she said was..."
She hesitated.
"She said that in the past, you followed me on my dates, and that you told some of them that you didn't want them to date me."
She made a point not to look directly at him, but from the corner of her eye, she saw his expression freeze. Not only shocked, guilty. She pressed her lips together to keep from blowing up. His face relaxed.
I can't believe it. He drummed his fingers on his leg. Who told you that?
It's not important.
She waved off the comment.
You don't know her.
I'm curious, he pressed.
It's not important, she said again. It's not true, is it?
Of course not. How could you even think something like that?
Liar, she screamed inside, willing herself not to say anything. In the silence, he shook his head.
Sounds to me like you need to start picking better friends. And to be honest, I'm a little hurt that we're even having this conversation.
She forced herself to smile.
I told her it wasn't true.
But you wanted to make sure by asking me in person.
She heard a tinge of anger in his voice and reminded herself to be careful.
You were coming over, she said, trying to sound casual. And besides, we've known each other long enough that we can talk like adults.
She looked at him wide-eyed, the victim of an innocent mistake.
Did it bother you that I asked?
No, but still, to even think it.
Keith threw up his hands.
I didn't. But I wanted to tell you because I figured you might want to know what other people might be saying behind your back. I don't like them talking about Ben's father that way, and I said that to her.
Her words had the effect she wanted. He puffed up with self-righteous pride. Thanks for defending me.
Nothing to defend. You know how gossip is. It's the toxic waste of small towns.
She shook her head.
So, how's everything else? Work going well?
Same as always. How's your class this year?
It's a pretty good group of kids. So far, anyway.
Good, he said. He motioned toward the yard. Some storm, huh? I could barely see the road.
I was thinking the same thing when you drove up. It's crazy.
It was gorgeous at the beach yesterday. You were at the beach?
She nodded.
Logan and I went. We've been seeing each other for a while now.
Huh, he said. Sounds like it's getting serious.
She offered a sidelong glance.
Don't tell me that woman was right about you.
No, of course not.
She worked up a playful smile.
I know. I was just teasing. And no, we're not serious yet, but he's a great guy.
He brought his hands together.
How does Nana feel about that?
Why does that matter?
He shifted in his seat.
I'm just saying that situations like this can be complicated. What are you talking about?
He works here, and you know how the courts are these days. You're opening yourself up to a major sexual harassment lawsuit.
He wouldn't do that.
Keith spoke with patience as if lecturing someone much younger.
Trust me, that's what everyone says. But think about it. He has no ties to the community, and if he's working for Nana, I doubt he has much money.
No offense.
But remember, your family owns a lot of land.
He shrugged.
I'm just saying that if I were you, I'd be very careful.
He sounded persuasive and, despite her knowledge to the contrary, caring. A friend who was generally concerned for her well-being. The man should be an actor, she thought.
Nana owns the land and the house, not me.
You know how lawyers can be.
I know exactly, she thought. I remember what your lawyer did at the custody hearing. I don't think it'll be a problem, but I'll talk to Nana about it, Beth conceded.
That's probably a good idea.
He sounded smug.
I'm just glad I was right about you.
What do you mean?
You know, not having a problem with me dating someone like Logan. Aside from the sexual harassment concern, I really like him.
He uncrossed his legs. I wouldn't say I have no problem with it.
But you just said...
I said I don't care who you date, and I don't. But I do care who comes into my son's life because I care about my son.
As you should. But what does that have to do with anything?
Beth protested.
Think about it, Beth. You don't see the things that I have to see. In your work, I mean.
But I see terrible things all the time, so of course I'd be concerned about anyone who spends a lot of time with Ben. I'd want to know if he was violent or if he was some sort of pervert.
He's not,
Beth interrupted. She felt her color rising despite herself.
We ran a background check on him.
They can be faked. It's not hard to come up with a new identity. How do you even know his real name's Logan? It's not like you can ask anyone around here. Have you talked to anyone from his past or his family?
No.
There you go. I'm just telling you to be careful. He shrugged. And I'm not saying that just because of Ben. It's for you, too. There are some bad people in the world, and the reason they're not in jail is because they've learned how to hide it.
You make it sound like he's some sort of criminal.
I'm not trying to. He could be the nicest, most responsible guy in the world. I'm just saying that you don't know who he really is, and until you do, it's better to be safe than sorry. You read the papers and watch the news. I'm not telling you something you don't already know. I just don't want anything to happen to Ben, and I don't want to see you get hurt. Beth opened her mouth to say something, but for the first time since sitting down with her ex, she could think of nothing to say. Chapter 21 Clayton Clayton sat behind the wheel of the car, feeling pretty damn pleased with himself. He'd had to do some pretty quick thinking, but it went far better than he'd thought it would, especially considering the way the conversation had begun. Someone had ratted him out, and as he drove, he tried to figure out who it might have been. Generally, there was no such thing as a secret in small towns, but this one was as close as you could get. The only ones who knew were the few men he'd had the little talk with, and, of course, himself. He figured it could have been one of them, but somehow he doubted it. They were worms, each and every one of them, and each and every one of them had moved on. There was no reason for them to have said anything. Even Adam the dork had found a new girlfriend, which made it unlikely he'd start talking now either. Then again, it might simply have been a rumor. It was possible that someone had suspicions about what he'd been up to just by connecting the dots. Beautiful woman getting dumped over and over for no apparent reason. And thinking back, he might have mentioned something to Moore or even Tony about Beth that someone might have overheard. But he'd never been dumb or drunk enough to be specific. He knew the problems that could cause with his dad, especially since usually he'd had to rely on law enforcement threats. But someone had said something to Beth. He didn't put much stock in the fact that Beth had said a female friend had told her. She could easily have changed that little detail to throw him off. It could have been a man or a woman. What he was more certain about was the fact that she'd learned the detail recently. Knowing her as he did, he knew there wasn't a chance she could have kept something like that bottled up for long. That's where things got confusing. He picked up Ben on Saturday morning. She'd said nothing then. By her own admission, she'd been at the beach on Saturday with Thibault. On Sunday, he'd seen her in church, but she was home by late afternoon. So who had told her, and when? It could have been Nana, he thought. The woman had always been a thorn in his side. Gramps, too. For the last 4 or 5 years, he'd been trying to get Nana to sell the land so he could develop it. Not only did it have a beautiful riverfront, but the creeks were valuable, too. People who moved down from the north loved waterfront property. Gramps generally took her rejections in stride. For whatever reason, he liked Nana. Probably because they went to the same church. Something that didn't seem to matter when it came to Nana's opinion of her former son-in-law, who went to the same church as well. Still, this seemed like the kind of trouble Thibault would start. But how on earth would he know? They'd seen each other only twice, and there wasn't a chance that Thibault could have deduced the truth from those two meetings. But what about the break-in? Clayton thought about it before rejecting his idea. He'd been in and out in 20 minutes, and he hadn't even had to jimmy the lock, since the guy hadn't bothered to lock the front door. And nothing had been missing, so why would Thibault even have suspected someone had been inside in the first place? And even if he'd guessed that someone had been in the house, why would he draw the connection to Clayton?
He couldn't answer those questions to his satisfaction, but the theory that Thibault had had something to do with this little wrinkle seemed to fit. He'd had nothing but problems since Thibault had arrived. So he figured Thibault was high on his list of folks who probably should have minded their own business, which gave him one more reason to finally fix the guy. He wasn't going to get too caught up with that now, though. He was still feeling pretty good about how he'd salvaged the conversation with Beth. It could have been a fiasco. The last thing on earth he'd expected when she'd called him over was for her to ask him about his involvement in her previous relationships, but he'd handled it well. Not only was he able to muster a plausible denial, but he'd also made her think twice about Thibault. He could tell by her expression that he'd brought up a number of issues she hadn't considered about Thibault. And best of all, he'd convinced her that it was all in Ben's best interest. Who knows? Maybe she'd end up dumping him and Thibault would leave town. Wouldn't that be something? Yet another of Beth's relationship problems would be solved, and Thibault would be out of the picture. He drove slowly, savoring the taste of victory. He wondered whether he should head out for a celebratory beer, but decided against it. It wasn't as if he could talk about what happened. Talking was what might have gotten him into trouble in the first place. After turning onto his street, he cruised past a number of large, well-maintained homes, each sitting on half an acre. He lived at the end of the cul-de-sac. His neighbors were a doctor and a lawyer. He hadn't done too badly, if he did say so himself. It was only when he turned in the driveway that he noticed someone standing on the sidewalk in front of the house. When he slowed, he saw the dog poised beside him and he slammed on the brakes, blinking in disbelief. He jammed the car into park. Despite the rain, he stepped out of the car and headed directly for Thibault. When Zeus snarled and began to creep forward, Clayton stopped short. Thibault raised a hand and the dog froze. "What the hell are you doing here?" he shouted, making his voice heard over the rain. "Waiting for you," Thibault replied. "I think it's time we had a talk." "Why the hell would I want to talk to you?" he spat out. "I think you know." Clayton didn't like the sound of that, but he wasn't about to be intimidated by the guy. Not now, not ever. "What I know is that you're loitering. In this county, that's a crime." "You won't arrest me." Part of him considered doing just that. "Don't be so sure." Thibault continued to stare at him as if daring him to prove it. Clayton wanted to wipe that expression off Thibault's face with his fist, but ever-present Cujo was there. "What do you want?" "Like I said, it's time for us to talk." His tone was even and steady. "I've got nothing to say to you," Clayton fumed. He shook his head. "I'm going inside. If you're still out here when I reach the porch, I'll have you arrested for threatening a deputy with a lethal weapon." He turned and started up the walk toward the door. "You didn't find the disc," Thibault called out. Clayton stopped and turned around. "What?" "The disc," Thibault repeated. "That's what you were looking for when you broke into my house. When you went through my drawers, looked under the mattress, checked the cabinets." "I didn't break into your house." He squinted at Thibault. "Yes," he said, "you did. Last Monday, when I was at work." "Prove it," he barked. "I already have all the proof I need. The motion detector I had set up in the fireplace turned on the video recorder. It was hidden in the fireplace. I figured you might try to find the disc one day, and you'd never think to look there." Clayton felt his stomach lurch as he tried to figure out whether Thibault was bluffing. Maybe he was, or maybe he wasn't. He couldn't tell. "You're lying." "Then walk away. I'll be happy to walk the videotape over to the newspaper and sheriff's department right now." "What do you want?" "I told you. I thought it was time we had a little talk."
"About what?"
"About what a dirtbag you are." He let the words roll out lazily. "Taking dirty pictures of co-eds? What would your grandfather think of that? I wonder what would happen if he somehow found out about it, or what the newspaper might say,
or what your dad, who I believe is the county sheriff, would think about his son breaking into my house.
Clayton felt his stomach give another nasty twist.
There was no way the guy would know these things, but he did.
What do you want?
Despite his best effort, he knew his tone had risen a notch when he said it. Thibault continued to stand before him, his gaze steady. Clayton swore the man never so much as blinked.
I want you to be a better person, he said.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Three things. Let's start with this. Stay out of Elizabeth's business.
Clayton blinked.
Who's Elizabeth?
Your ex-wife.
You mean Beth?
You've been running her dates off ever since you've been divorced. You know it, and I know it, and now she knows it too. It's not going to happen again. Ever. Are we clear?
Clayton didn't respond.
Number two, stay out of my business. That means my house, my job, my life. Got it?
Clayton stayed silent.
And number three, this is very important.
He raised a palm outward, as if taking an imaginary oath.
If you take your anger at me out on Ben, you'll have to answer to me.
Clayton felt the hairs on the back of his neck rise.
Is that a threat?
No, Thibault said. It's the truth.
Do those three things, and you'll have no trouble from me. No one will know what you've done.
Clayton clenched his jaw. In the silence, Thibault moved toward him. Zeus stayed in place, his frustration evident at being forced to stay behind. Thibault stepped closer until they were face to face. His voice remained as calm as it had been all along.
Know this. You've never met someone like me before. You don't want me as an enemy.
With that, Thibault turned away and started down the sidewalk. Zeus continued to stare at Clayton until he heard the command to come. Then he trotted toward Thibault, leaving Clayton standing in the rain, wondering how everything that had been so perfect could have suddenly gone so wrong.
Chapter 22 Tebow
I think I want to be an astronaut,
Ben said. Tebow was playing chess with him on the back porch and trying to figure out his next move. He had yet to win a game, and though he wasn't absolutely sure, the fact that Ben had started talking struck him as a bad sign. They'd been playing a lot of chess lately. There hadn't been a day without steady, heavy rain since October began, 9 days earlier. Already the eastern part of the state was flooding, with additional rivers rising daily.
Sounds good.
Either that or a fireman.
Tebow nodded. I've known a couple of firemen.
Or a doctor.
Tebow said. He began reaching for his bishop.
I wouldn't do that,
Ben said. Tebow looked up.
I know what you're thinking you should do, Ben added. It won't work.
What should I do?
Not that.
Tebow drew his hand back. It was one thing to lose. It was another thing to lose continually. Worse, he didn't seem to be closing the gap. If anything, Ben was getting better faster than he was. The previous game had lasted all of 21 moves.
Would you like to see my treehouse?
Ben said.
It's really cool. It's got the big platform that hangs out over the creek and the shaky bridge.
I'd love to see it.
Not now. Some other time, I mean.
Sounds great, Tebow said. He reached for his rook.
I wouldn't move that one either.
Tebow arched his brow as Ben leaned back.
I'm just telling you, he added. What should I do?
He shrugged, looking and sounding like the 10-year-old he was.
Whatever you want.
Except move the bishop and the rook. Ben pointed to another piece.
And your other bishop. Knowing you, that's what you'll try next, since you're trying to set up your knight.
But it won't work either, since I'll sacrifice the bishop for mine and move my queen in to take the pawn over there.
That freezes your queen, and after I castle my king, I'll move my knight there. Two moves after that, I'll have you in checkmate.
Tebow brought his hand to his chin. Do I have any chance in this game?
No.
How many moves do I have left?
Anywhere from 3 to 7.
Then maybe we should start over. Ben pushed his glasses up on his nose.
Maybe.
You could have told me earlier.
You seem so serious about the game. I didn't want to bother you.
The next game was no better. If anything, it was worse because Elizabeth had decided to join them and their conversation proceeded in much the same way. He could see Elizabeth trying to stifle her giggles. Over the last week and a half, they'd settled into a routine. After work, with overpowering rain coming down continuously, he'd come up to the house to play a few games of chess with Ben and stay for dinner, where the four of them would sit at the table, chatting amiably. After that, Ben would go upstairs to shower, and Nana would send them outside to sit on the porch, while she stayed in the kitchen to clean up, saying things like, "Cleaning to me is like being naked to a monkey." Tebow knew she wanted to give them time alone before he left. It still amazed him that she was able to stop being the boss as soon as his workday was done and shift so easily to the role of grandmother of the woman he was dating. He didn't think there were many people who would be able to pull that off. It was getting late, though, and Tebow knew it was time to leave. Nana was talking on the phone. Elizabeth had gone inside to tuck Ben into bed, and as Tebow sat on the porch, he could feel the exhaustion in his shoulders. He hadn't been sleeping much since his confrontation with Clayton. That night, unsure how Clayton would respond, he'd gone back to his house and made it appear as though he planned to spend a normal evening at home. Instead, once he turned out the lights, he'd climbed out the window in his bedroom at the rear of the house and trotted into the woods, Zeus by his side. Despite the rain, he'd stayed out most of the night, watching for Clayton. The next night, he'd watched Elizabeth's. On the third night, he'd alternated between his house and hers. The endless rain didn't bother him or Zeus in the slightest. He'd rigged a couple of camouflaged lean-tos that kept them dry. The hard part for him was working after sleeping only the last few hours before dawn. Since then, he'd been alternating nights, but it still wasn't enough sleep for him to catch up. He wouldn't stop, though. The man was unpredictable, and he looked for signs of Clayton's presence when he was at work and when he ran errands in town. In the evening, he took different routes home, cutting through wooded areas at a run and then watching the road to make sure Clayton wasn't following. He wasn't afraid of the man, but he wasn't stupid either. Clayton was not only a member of the first family of Hampton County, but also in law enforcement, and it was the latter that most concerned him. How hard would it be to plant something, drugs, stolen items, even a gun that had been used in a crime, in Tebow's home? Or claim that Tebow had them in his possession and arranged to have that evidence discovered? Not hard. Tebow was certain that any jury in the county would side with testimony provided by law enforcement over a stranger's, no matter how flimsy the evidence might be or what genuine alibi he had. Add to that the deep pockets and influence of the Claytons, and it wouldn't be hard to line up witnesses fingering Tebow for any number of crimes. The scary part was that he could imagine Clayton doing any of those things, which was why he'd gone to see Clayton and told him about both the disc and the videotape in the first place. Though he had neither, he'd cracked and tossed the disc soon after taking the camera, and the motion-activated recorder had been an inspired invention. Bluffing seemed to be the only option he had to buy him enough time to figure out his next step. The animosity Clayton felt for him was dangerous and unpredictable. If he'd been willing to break into Tebow's house, if he'd manipulated Elizabeth's personal life, the man would probably do whatever he thought necessary to get rid of Tebow. The other threats, about the newspaper and the sheriff, the hint about informing the grandfather, simply reinforced the bluff. He knew that Clayton was searching for the disc because he believed Tebow could use it against him. It was either because of his job or because of his family, and a few hours researching the illustrious family history in the library on Sunday afternoon had been enough to convince Tebow that it was probably a bit of both. But the problem with bluffs was that they worked until they didn't. How long would it be until Clayton called it? A few more weeks? A month? More than that? And what would Clayton do? Who could tell? Right now, Clayton thought Tebow had the upper hand, and Tebow had no doubt that was only enraging Clayton even further. In time, the anger would get the better of him, and Clayton would react to either him, Elizabeth, or Ben. When Tebow didn't follow through in the aftermath and produce the disc, Clayton would be free to act as he pleased. Tebow still wasn't sure what to do about that. He couldn't imagine leaving Elizabeth, or Ben and Nana for that matter. The longer he stayed in Hampton, the more it felt to him like this was the place he belonged. And that meant he had to not only watch out for Clayton, but avoid the man as much as possible. He supposed his hope was that after enough time, Clayton would simply accept the matter and let it rest. Unlikely, he knew, but for now, it was all he had.
"You look distracted again," Elizabeth said, opening the screen door behind him.
Tebow shook his head. "Just tired from the week. I thought the heat was hard, but at least I could dodge some of that. There's no avoiding the rain." She took a seat beside him on the porch swing.
"You don't like being drenched?"
"Let's just say it's not the same as being on vacation."
"I'm sorry."
"It's okay. And I'm not complaining. I really don't mind it most of the time, and it's better me getting wet than Nana. And tomorrow's Friday, right?" She smiled.
"Tonight, I'm driving you home. No arguments this time."
"Okay," he said. Elizabeth peeked in the window before turning her attention to Tebow again.
"You weren't lying when you said you could play the piano, right?"
"I can play."
"When was the last time you played?"
He shrugged, thinking about it. 2 or 3 years ago.
"In Iraq?"
He nodded. "One of my commanding officers was having a birthday. He loved Willie Smith, who was one of the great jazz pianists of the 1940s and 1950s. When word got out that I knew how to play, I got roped into doing a performance."
"In Iraq,"
she said again, not hiding her disbelief. "Even Marines need a break." She tucked a strand of hair behind her ear.
"I take it you can read music."
"Of course," he said. "Why? Do you want me to teach Ben?" She didn't seem to hear him.
"How about church? Do you ever go?"
For the first time, he looked at her. "I'm getting the sense there's more to this conversation than simply the two of us getting to know each other better."
"When I was inside, I heard Nana talking on the phone. You know how much Nana loves the choir, right?
And that she just started to sing solos again?" He considered his response, suspicious of where this was going and not bothering to hide it. "Yes?"
"Her solo this Sunday is even longer. She's so excited about it."
"Aren't you?"
"Kind of,"
she sighed, a pained expression on her face.
"It turns out that Abigail fell yesterday and broke her wrist. That's what Nana has been talking about on the phone."
"Who's Abigail?"
"The pianist with the church. She accompanies the choir every Sunday."
Elizabeth started to move the swing back and forth, staring out into the storm.
"Anyway, Nana said she'd find someone to fill in. In fact, she promised."
"Oh," he said.
"She also said that she already had someone in mind."
"I see."
Elizabeth shrugged. "I just thought you'd want to know. I'm pretty sure Nana will want to talk to you in a few minutes, but I didn't want her to blindside you. I figured it would be better if I did it."
"I appreciate that." For a long moment,